But for this sermon to be preached, I've got to start with a little confession time. Okay, everybody loves minister confession times, right? I totally struggle with one-way relationships. Now, if you're not familiar with that term, what a one-way relationship is where you have to do all the work. It means that, you call them, but they seldom call you. Have you ever done this experiment before where you pick up your phone and you look at the calls that you receive and you begin leafing back through them and suddenly you realize all the calls to certain individuals, the lines are always going out, but you never see the ones that are coming back in. Because you're doing all the calling. They seldom call you. But it doesn't say never. But when they do call you and you see the number pop up on the screen, you know exactly what's about to happen. Either they're having a crisis of life, either they need some advice, or they have something they need you to do. So you see that number flash up and you're like, oh my gosh, what now? You're chuckling, but do you not have these on your phone? Are not these people around? You see, then it really happens. Because you are convinced yourself that this relationship is substantial to you. So you begin doing things for them. But then something happens in your life and you need something in return. And they're busy. They're occupied. And this happens over and over and over again. And eventually you begin to get the message, right? You begin to get the message. This is a one-way street. And the problem is those relationships, they're exhausting. They're frustrating. They get you irritated. Because you begin to ask yourself, what's wrong with me? See, we want real relationships. And those relationships are always relationships that go both ways. Do you have people on your phone that you call them and they call you? Okay, I need to get in the modern world. They text you and you text them. Because let's be realistic. Nobody really calls anybody anymore. We just like send a little short text back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Have you ever looked at your thing and see how does it even out with people? When I talked about those one-way relationships, did people's names stop in your head, start popping in your head and say, yeah, I got one of those? Exhaustion is a really good term, isn't it? And believe it or not, that's not the confession part for the minister. It's the next thought that bothers me sometimes about myself. See, because sometimes our relationship with God can feel like a one-way relationship. Yeah, I'm not talking about what the spiritual, actually good way is. I'm talking about in the me way. This is the way that, I feel like I'm giving God an awful lot. I spend an awful lot of time doing things for God. I spend an awful lot of time reading my Bible and praying and doing this and that and the other. God, where are you? Where are you? This is a one-way relationship. See, in a relationship, I want to know, but I also want to be known. I want to seek, but I also want to be sought. I want to love, but I also want to be loved. And when it comes to God, we begin to do things like study his power, study his greatness, we study his attributes, and all those things are really good things. Because God is powerful, God is holy, God is the creator of the universe. But if we're not careful, we can get in all of this cram session for God, that our God begins to become very distant, very far away, very unrelatable. And I feel real bad about this confession moment, except for I am not the only person that has this problem in history. In fact, I know another guy that did. His name was David, really? David couldn't have had these kind of problems. I mean, this is the man that has such a heart with God, right? David had his issues, but his relationship with God was never one of them. But yet, when we arrive at Psalm 139, David's struggling with the God thing. See, a lot of times we read Psalm 139, and we think this is this little beautiful poetry about how God loves me so much. That's not what Psalm 139 is. It is an individual's quest to ask God, where are you? And then the individual coming to terms with where God is. So hopefully you have made your way to Psalm 139, and we are going to look at David's solution to his one-way God relationship. And the first solution David comes to is being known by God. God knows me because he sees me. We're going to start right there in verses 1 through 6, but I'm not going to necessarily do this one verse at a time because we would be here a very long time. This is a long psalm. A theological word for God sees me always is omniscient. God is all-knowing. But David has not given us a definition of just God's knowledge. He's showing us something. He's showing us that God's knowledge means he knows me personally. Verse 2 says, you know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. Interesting. The first thing David looks at is God sees my actions. And I think about that thought, and I begin to look at it, and it sounds like another character I know. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sakes. Better watch out. Better not cry. Better not pout. And I'm telling you why. And you know what? This is sometimes how we see God's omniscient power. He's sitting there waiting for me to make a mistake. He's sitting there trying to look at my life and say, yeah, it's going to happen eventually. And when it does, oh, you're going to get it. You're going to be on the naughty list for so long. But that's not how David is seeing God. See, he is saying God sees because he cares. Now, if you're a parent, you sort of understand this because you annoy your kids when you begin watching their lives, and the older they get, the more annoying you are. And it really isn't until they're about 50 or 60 years old they realize that they were watching my life because they cared about me. And you know why they realize that? Because now they've got their kids. They're growing them into adults, and you know what? They want mom and dad to butt out of their life. But God says, I'm not going to butt out. I care. You have not escaped God's notice just because you can't see him right now. You have not been forgotten. Even things nobody else sees, God sees. And not only does he see it, oh, this scares me. He perceives me from afar. Huh. Have you ever had one of those moments, especially in those one-way relationships, and you're exhausted? Man, you hear that thing, or you see that, and you begin to think, if you only knew what I was thinking. Here's the thing. God does. Verse 4 says, before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. Before I can even put the vowels together and form my mouth and start wagging my tongue, God knew exactly what I was going to say. Is that scary? That means even if I get ready to say it, I go, God knew exactly what I was about to say. God knew exactly what's going on in my head. And that's a very scary place to live sometimes. And then David continues in verse 5, you hem me in behind and before me. You lay your hand upon me. That word hem me in literally translates to surround or build a wall around, to protect. It's like wind up that little pack and play we used to have when we used to go on trips and the boys were little, and you could take that thing and put it in the middle of a living room, and you could, okay, for most kids, I had one this did no good for. You could put that person into that pack and play, throw a few toys in there, and they would sit in that thing for hours. There are some kids that get tired of being packed and played, and they decide to climb and push and jump, and they flip the whole thing over. Those kids exist, okay? But you have to understand that what God is trying to do when he says he hems us in, he knows us so well, he's actually built a wall around us, but not a wall of isolation. It's a wall of protection. David is saying, the God who knows me is the God who surrounds me. God's knowledge is not meant to make us afraid. He's not the boogeyman out to get us. He's God. He knows us. He loves us. God's knowledge is meant to remind us that we are never, ever, ever outside his care. Even when the world's falling apart and you don't have a clue how you're going to put the pieces back together, God says, you know what? I didn't abandon you. As a matter of fact, as David continues in the psalm, it isn't not only that God didn't abandon him, he says, God is near me. Relationships are difficult when they're distant, aren't they? So Deb and I dated for 4 years before we got married, but the last year was kind of different. She was doing her student teaching at Lynchburg College, and I accepted a job with the Mickey Company in Charlottesville, Virginia. That's 81 miles from my apartment doorstep to her doorstep. I still remember exactly how many miles, 81 miles. Our relationship had to change. Instead of seeing each other almost every day, we had to settle for calls, and that was before there were cell phones and free long distance, so it was usually one call a week because the calls cost by the minute. It meant that I came in on the weekends, and then Sunday night I disappeared again for an entire week. Probably a good thing. She was student teaching. She had no time for me. So it worked good, but it complicates your relationship when there's a distance between you. Of course, this isn't a problem for God. David tells us in verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? David begins asking these questions. Where can I go that God's not already there? Could I go up to heaven? That's probably a bad place because that's where he lives, right? Could I go to the depths, throw myself down in the ocean? Probably not a good idea for me because I don't swim. Could I travel to the farthest place I could find? That's a big thought, isn't it? I got nowhere I can go. Because the answer is always the same. No matter where I go on this planet, or even if I got in a rocket ship and flew up to the moon, or eventually got my trip to Mars. You understand? I didn't leave God's creation. I didn't leave God's presence. God is everywhere. Now, this is one of those truths that's easy to say, but honestly, my mind doesn't wrap that far. How can somebody be everywhere at the same time? We have to appreciate God is not limited by location. There is nowhere that you can go that he is absent. Not even your bedroom with the door shut and the lights cut off, and you think, God doesn't see me now. He even sees in the dark. Hey, right. But he even sees in the dark. But as we continue to look at David, David is not writing this as a warning. He's writing it as a comfort. I can't lose myself from God. Okay, I can separate myself from God, but that's more about the sin in my life. But I cannot lose, God does not lose track of me. And that's kind of a comforting thought. Because sometimes we need the presence of God. We need to understand it's not something that we're just trying to escape. I need to experience it. David says, if I arise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the farthest seas, even there your hand will, and I love this, guide me. God is the nosy parent. Always seems to know where you are, even though you think they have no clue where you are. Always seems to know you've done something, even when you thought you were really good at covering your tracks. Always willing to be there when nothing seems to be going right. That's being known by God. Even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. So we have a two-handed God. Did you ever figure that one out? The left hand is the one he stretches out to say, follow me. And the right hand is the one he reaches and grabs your other hand and says, follow me. Isn't that what your parents did to you when you were a kid? They said, follow me, and when they walked down the grocery store aisle, they turned around, and you're still back there with the bubble gum. They came and grabbed your hand and said, let me explain this to you. Follow me. That's God. That's how God cares about us. Because there are times, let's be honest, life kind of feels dark. It happens. We struggle. There are seasons where you absolutely, positively do not understand what is happening. God, what are you doing? And why are you doing it? And why don't you stop? Lord, I don't get it. There are moments when we cannot see what is ahead. It's too foggy. Too much commotion. Too many things are in my way. But here's the beauty of God. God knows you. And God says, even in the darkness, will not be dark for you. God sees in the dark. I didn't like that when he was peeking in my room. But I sure like it when he's not in my path. God sees you in your darkness and can still guide you, take your hand, and lead you out. Man, that's kind of comforting, don't you think? I'm not living on a one-way street at all. And then I continue to look at this. God knows me because, here's a good one. He made me. Wow. He made me? Yeah, he made you. This is how David looks at this. David now moves from God's knowledge and presence to his absolute power. But David is not focused on God's power by talking about galaxies, oceans, mountains. No. He focuses on himself in verse 13. This is what it says. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. David begins describing God like a master craftsman. He knows his work because he designed it. Master craftsmen, they know every single detail about you. Why? Because they made you. They can look at it and they can see their handiwork. They don't even have to put a signature on it. If you've ever been a craftsman, you know, I made that. I see what I did. And then David breaks out into praise because he realizes, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. That's a big moment. Because David isn't just saying, thanks, God. You did a pretty cool job. All the colors go together. Could have used a little more hair that stayed around longer. Maybe a little less around the middle. But God, you did a pretty good job. I mean, all the pieces and parts are there, and they work exactly like you intended me to be. He's saying, the God who made me didn't make me as a mistake. You're not an accident. Your existence is not random. God formed you. God created you. And therefore, God knows you. And then David gets really personal. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Wouldn't you like to get a copy of your book? Seriously, wouldn't that be so much better? If I could get my book and I got to read it when I was young, then I would know how the story ends, right? That would be so cool. No, that's not the way this worked. The book was written, and I know it reminds me of, so how could God write the book and I still have free will? That's another question for another day. But it says God wrote the book. What David is trying to help us understand is that God made you for a purpose. Your life has meaning. Your life, whether you know it or not, has a direction. Your life has purpose. Oh, that makes us feel pretty good, right? Then David gets to the end of the song. And I'm not so sure I like the ending as much as I like the rest of it, because it feels really good to have the one-way street open to a two-way street, right? Then David says, but being known by God requires a response. See, this is where it all begins to get interesting, because God sees me, God knows me, God's near to me. There you go. God made me. And knowing about God is not the same as knowing God. If I'm living my God relationship on a one-way street, guess who blocked off the other lane? It's me. My one-way street isn't because God doesn't see me. It's because I stopped seeing God. You can know facts about somebody and still not have a relationship with them. You can know their favorite color, their favorite food. You can know how long they sleep at night. You can know if they snore or not. You can know everything there is to know about them, but there still doesn't make a relationship if there's no response. And so David responds as we get to this last section. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Ooh, I don't know if I want to invite God to do that one. Search me, God? Well, David started that psalm with, Lord, you have searched me and known me. But now he's inviting God, come back and look again. Look a little deeper inside me. He's not asking God to discover something that God does not know. He's inviting God into the deepest part of his life. It's that opening the door thing. It's the come and sit at my table thing. It's the let me tell you about your life, because I know all about your life. Because when you begin to look at the psalm, it's a prayer psalm. And prayer is not about giving God information. God already knows about the prayer. Prayer is about our relationship with him. Even when you know what someone is thinking, you still want to hear their voice, right? How many times, again, when you have kids, you know exactly what they're going to ask for the moment they walk into the room. Do you stop and say, don't say a word? I got it off. You want to hear them make the request. Sometimes you want to hear it because you want to make sure they understand, they hear what they asked for, but you want to hear it. Even when you know when someone needs, you still want to talk to them, right? You don't want to just like airmail all of the answers to prayer. Because relationship is built through this idea of communication. Therefore, David does three things. First of all, David commits to the relationship. That's David. He declares where his loyalty is, what his priority is. He wants to be aligned with God, because if God knows us, then the question becomes, what will we do with what he knows? What will we trust him? Will we follow him? Will we allow him to lead us? And then David, he submits. Verse 24 says, "See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting." This is the prayer of someone who understands who God is. This is the prayer of David. God, search me, but don't change me? No, that's not the prayer of David. That's not what David says. David says, search me and lead me. The goal is to allow God, who knows us, to transform our lives, to change me. Can I just tell you? That's a truly amazing thought. See, the amazing truth of Psalm 139 is not simply that God knows everything. The amazing truth is that God knows everything about me and still invites me to come closer. That is a miracle. Nothing short of it. He doesn't simply reveal what he knows about me. He invites me to respond to what he knows about me. David responds, well, search me, O God. Because the God who knows us is also the God who loves us. Who doesn't desire to live on a one-way street. He wants a back-and-forth relationship with each and every one of us.